Talking Flicks with JT and Grant Lee.
Yeah, hello and welcome to our Talking Flickster podcast. JT here with the legend, Mr. Lee. He's come back again. Hello, Mr. Lee.
Hello, Jay. How are you this week?
I'm very good, thank you. You didn't turn up to rehearsal, so I wasn't sure whether you'd be here or not, but you're here, so that's the main thing.
Well, yeah, if I don't make it to rehearsals, at least you know I'm definitely going to be there for the show. So
yeah,
I don't have to go to rehearsals. I just like to do everything off the cuff, as I keep saying.
But 2 minutes to 12, Mr. Lee, it's just not good enough.
I know, it's not good enough. I'm sorry. I had a lot on. Today's been a really busy day, right?
I'm Wednesday's sick and tired of busy. Playing second fiddle to you, Mr. Lee. I don't know what's going on here. Make me more of a priority, please.
One day you're going to go, wow, you are here for rehearsals and you won't turn up for the actual recording. Yeah. So 2 minutes to 12, I'll be going, where's Jay? What's he doing?
And you know it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen.
Yes.
But you don't really need to do much rehearsal or prep for this one because you actually saw today's movie, which we're reviewing here.
Yes, and it's actually quite funny because I have to say off the cuff, when people have been coming into the cinema to say, oh, look, I'm here to watch it.
Oh, no.
And it's like, I would say to them, are you here to watch here or are you here? And they go, oh, I'm here to watch a movie, yes. It's like, yeah.
You're just lucky you don't have a I don't have a boo sound effect. If I had one, I'd be playing it right now. Best I can do is
too funny.
It's the best I can do.
God, we've got to spend more on the budget to get you some more sound effects, I think.
We can work on that.
We can. But I did get to see it, and I can't wait to talk to our Talking Flickster Davidson today because I know I enjoyed it, and I can't wait to find out whether David enjoyed it as well.
Well, we'll find out after we have a listen to hear.
Hey, Dad. I'd like to meet Margaret.
Nice to meet you, Margaret.
Nice to meet you, Mr. Young.
Time sure does fly, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Take a straight and stronger course to the corner of your life. Make the White Queen run so fast. She hasn't got time to make you.
You know, if you like, you could spend the rest of the night here.
I could spend the rest of my life here.
This was our home. We lived here.
Yeah, it's here, and let's welcome our Talking Flickster. It's David. G'day, David.
Hey, how you going?
Very good, mate. Welcome on board. Great to have you here as we take a look at this movie, which yes, I think all reports so far is very positive from both you and Mr. Lee.
Yeah, look, I went and watched the film just the other day, and it really grew on me as I kind of, you know, it was a film I actually went and saw on my own, which is unusual for me. You obviously, seeing a film is often a social experience, but I found myself very quickly immersed and swept away in this story or these stories, these interwoven narratives. So like a very interesting filmic experience from my perspective.
Is what I got as well. I actually went and saw the film on the weekend on my own too, David, but I was actually in Port Macquarie. So I actually had a nice morning watching it. And I have to say, for a movie that the camera doesn't move at all, and once you get, you know, that in your head that the camera's not moving, but what is happening on the screen is incredible, from dinosaurs right through to early 2000s to COVID. It goes right through the whole time frame, doesn't it?
It certainly does. And the opening sequence, I think of, you know, it was the Cretaceous era, the end of the rule of the dinosaurs, and there was a kind of a representation of a catastrophe, and then a rebirth, and then some time-lapse photography that brought us to the present day, and then really explored kind of the 17th to the 21st century, I suppose. So it's extraordinarily ambitious, and it was, I suppose, initially disorienting, but as I kind of found myself in the film, I really did find it a mesmeric experience.
From what we see, it's all happening in this one room of the house. I don't think we've really seen a story in any movie where the whole movie is set in this one room. There's just so many different elements behind what happens in this particular room.
Absolutely. It's interesting in that you do have a sense of confinement and maybe even claustrophobia at times, and I think that's very intentional. I think thematically Zemeckis is representing how we live our lives in many respects in certain rooms where, you know, extraordinarily things happen, you know, really powerful life events define our lives. And all of this happens in one place, and we're kind of in our lives not especially conscious of that. But there is a truth in that, which I think Zemeckis is trying to explore. And that's what filmgoers might find initially confronting, is the stationary nature of the storytelling.
And it's funny you should say that, because when you think of one room and the camera not moving, you don't actually realise after a while that things haven't moved, because I know when I was watching it, from the very first people who moved into the house, which was John Harter, who was obsessed with flying and he wanted to be near the aerodrome, and, you know, his wife, you know, they had the great shot of the house of Benjamin Franklin out the back and, well, out the front of their window. And then things change, and, you know, then you've got the lovely couple who are inventing something in the house. So you imagine, you know, a room that could talk, and I'm thinking of JT's lounge room probably now, thinking, you know, if that room could talk, you know, what would we find out? And this is the way.
Why did you say my lounge room? Is done. Is there something that I missed, Mr. Lee?
Well, have you been watching me again? You know, with all your kids. It's all your kids, you know, like, you know, Christmas times and, you know, things like that. It's memories. And, you know, when you think you move into a place, you don't think who was in there before or who was in that place, you know, 10 years ago if it was built, or 20 years ago. You don't think of that. You're living in that moment. And to see this film, and it shows you what happens in that house over such a huge area of time, it's incredible.
Absolutely. I felt, despite the confinement, despite the claustrophobia, paradoxically, there's this vast sweep of time, and so many different families, so many different stories are interwoven in that one particular place. And, you know, that extends not just, you know, to the Cretaceous era with the dinosaurs and so forth, but there's also a really interesting representation of First Nations people who lived in that area prior to colonisation. And that theme of love and marriage and connection, of family and birth and death, all of those things are also interwoven around these singular places in human history. And I think that idea, as it evolved throughout the film, became more and more powerful and more moving For me, I certainly found it actually a very emotional experience. And like, I'm kind of in midlife, I'm in my 50s, and I don't know if it's got something to do with that stage of life where you are starting to become a little bit more, you know, reflective and you know, more conscious of, you know, other alternatives that you've, you know, other possibilities that you might have explored, or, yeah, other things that might have been said or experienced. That also becomes part of the narrative, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And we will move on from The Room in just a sec. I know, because we've been – it's all about The Room, but one more question with that. The design changes so much over time. You see it right throughout the movie. Which time period did you like the most? What really caught your eye that you really enjoyed?
No, look, that's a great question. And that's the strength of the film, in that – one room can lend itself to so much variety and so much intrigue and so many personal touches. But I would say the eccentric inventor, and I found that a particularly fascinating era. He was living there with his wife. I found that particular era. And that the excitement around their lives and their sense of spirit and adventure really quite infectious. It was just kind of intriguing to see the kind of celebrity, I suppose, in which they were living their lives within their own space, and the sheer delight that they had in one another's company, you know, how that kind of also informed other aspects of the film. Like, I think that was a really important relationship and a really important connection because, yeah, strangely enough, like, the sofa bed, like, becomes a sort of an important kind of metaphor in the story later on too, that, like, you don't think about it that much, but the furnishings of your house really do reflect your personalities and your relationships and your hopes and also your disappointments.
What did you think of Tom Hanks and Robin Wright back on the screen again together after 30 years of not being on the screen together?
Oh, look, they certainly had a powerful chemistry and connectedness, and I thought they were two outstanding performances. And, like, I know that this will be one of the things kind of, you know, discussed by audiences and critics, is like how the aging process is handled. And obviously CGI plays a pretty significant role. Mm. I thought it was really well done. And I thought their different, you know, like, eras in their lives was really deftly handled and really visually authentic. I wasn't watching it going, oh, that looks stupid, or, you know, that's not convincing. I found I was watching it and believing and seeing them, you know, visibly age before your eyes, I think was also pretty spectacularly matched, actually, by two great performances. It's not Forrest Gump. Like, if audiences are going to see the film expecting Forrest Gump, they're probably going to be disappointed. Like, Forrest Gump has a different sweep and a different grandeur to it across American history, doesn't it? And, you know, two extraordinary characters. But this also has a kind of sweep and an epic history. And these two central characters, Richard and Margaret, played by Tom Hanks and Robin Wright, I thought was outstanding. And as I was, you know, watching the title credits, I was thinking, you know, that this would be worthy of an Oscar as a film, but also a couple of those performances would also be Oscar worthy.
Which I do agree totally. I hope it gets for Best Picture nom, and also Best Actor and Actress. But funny, one little thing that I noticed was Paul Bettany, who plays Tom Hanks' father, he plays Al Young, and Kelly Reilly, she plays Rose Young, which is Al's wife. they are actually 15 to 20 years younger than Tom Hanks. And when they do the CGI, he looks really young. And Tom Hanks and, you know, Robin Wright, they do. They look really young. And when you think they're actually older than the parents that are in the movie, but you don't see that. And I didn't see that at all until after, when I was researching more about the movie, I went, oh, yeah, that's right. They are. They're much younger than Tom Hanks. But you don't see that in the movie. Did you find that, David?
Well, I obviously didn't go to the same depth of research because I didn't discover the age difference.
Don't worry. So, Mr. Lee doesn't usually do this. Okay, he's made an effort this week.
The age differences, and like I say, like that doesn't surprise me, because I just felt that process of aging and the age gaps between the parents and their children, and the sense of a growing family was also deftly handled, that I was immersed. In criticism about the willing suspension of disbelief as being kind of critical to your enjoyment of a film. And we all know those moments, like when you're taken out of a film and you kind of become quite cynical, or there's those moments where you're completely removed and you just think, oh, that's rubbish, and now that didn't happen to me in this film. I just found I sank further and further into these narratives, and I found them genuinely emotionally engaging. And those performances by Paul Bettany and Kelly Reilly as Al and Rose, I think was pretty central to, establishing that atmosphere. And it would have been extremely difficult. You can only imagine this is a kind of a nightmare for the actors, being also similarly confined as we are as an audience, to this particular one, this particular space. You really do need, I suppose, a repertoire and a power as an actor. And really, you would need to develop a really strong sense of an ensemble as a cast to pull it off, because in a sense it's quite stagey moments in it, and it feels at times like they're like vignettes, really short scenes that accumulate, and that's how the film develops its kind of narrative power over time.
Yeah, it does. And should point out too that the film, a lot of it based off this graphic novel by Richard McGuire. Have you read the novel, David, at all?
No, I noticed that. That's not a graphic novel that I've come across, actually. I am by training an English teacher, so I probably should have read it. And I felt bitterly disappointed that I hadn't. I really felt I'd let myself down. There is a children's text, like a picture book called Window, that it reminded me of, which shows a view out of a window over many years and many generations, that kind of achieves the same thing visually, but obviously a much simpler approach to this. This had, greater themes, didn't it, that it was at least trying to engage. Whether it did so successfully enough, I suppose, is a matter of conjecture, and I'd be interested to hear your thoughts about, how the film landed finally, like what kind of an achievement it is, but I'm sure we'll get to that.
Yeah. Now, something, when you just said windows, it just reminded me, the way they changed from one time to another was having little picture frames come up, little windows. And when you looked at it, it was actually, it might have been 200 years ago, and you're looking at what the land looked like when there was nothing, or in the future, that, they were in the past and looking in the future of, what was the room like, and, it might have been painted red with red walls, but, where you were at that time, it was a black wall or something, It was very interesting how they did that, and even transitioned into the different time periods. I didn't find that, at first it was a little, but then after a while I didn't find it annoying or anything like that. I actually found it quite curious, because, this part of, you know, this land or the part of that house has been there for so long. And at least you could see and go, oh, yeah, that's what it was like, you know, 100 years ago. Or, yep, that's what it's looking like in 20 years' time. I found that very interesting.
Yeah, I similarly did. And thanks for bringing that up, actually, because I did note it as one of the film's innovations. I thought it was very effectively handled in that those inserts, perhaps you would call them, like yeah. they did manage to kind of create a resonance between those time periods. And it was almost kind of like a visual poem, like, yeah, like a style of poetry where you're kind of like touching on an idea and then that evokes a similar idea from a different time period. And then sometimes the film would then actually segue to that time period that would transition, yeah, either back or forward in time. So it did have a kind of rhyme, I suppose, that connected these moments across the history of that particular space, which was fascinating.
It certainly was. Now, the next question we're going to get our talking flickster from last week, which was Zane, we're going to get him to ask you a question, David.
This is another collaboration between Robert Zemeckis and Tom Hanks. So my question is, how does it stack up compared to their previous films, like Forrest Gump, Castaway, and all the others? How does it compare to those?
It's a great question. Look, I've pretty much gone the whole journey with Tom Hanks and he's produced so many extraordinary performances. I think, in terms of his filmography, the films like Forrest Gump or, Saving Private Ryan are obviously out-and-out classics. In terms of their collaboration, I think this film does rate with the very best of the works of Tom Hanks and Zemeckis and, including that Robin Wright as well and, Eric Roth as a writer. I think that while it might not initially hit the mark with audiences and maybe not even with critics, I think over time it will develop a following and it will be a film which is appreciated right up there with the very best of, of Hanks and Robert Zemeckis. So, it's a difficult question to answer because, I think most people will go, oh, look, this is too left field. This is, this is really kind of disappointed the expectations I might have carried into this film, especially if you were expecting Forrest Gump Part 2. But I think over time, kind of like the film, it will grow on audiences and it will develop a bit of a following because I think it does establish some very powerful truths about our lives and the places that we live and the importance that they have to us without us necessarily being conscious of that.
Very, very true. And that was a good answer too. I agree totally. Now, next week, we've got a movie review happening on Red One, which is a Christmas movie. Do you have a question you'd like to ask the Talking Flickster for next week, David?
I do have a question. And I believe this is a Christmas film, Red One. We've seen numerous, fantastic Christmas classics. We've also seen some appalling films over time as well. So my question will be, how does Red One rank as a Christmas film? Is it a complete disaster that you would avoid like the plague, or is it going to become one of these rewatched Christmas classics that families will enjoy for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, got to be a Christmas classic. What's your favourite Christmas movie? Which one do you enjoy the most?
Oh, look, I mean, I love the action of Die Hard, I've got to say.
Well, there's the argument. Is it a Christmas movie, Mr. Lee? What do you reckon?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is a Christmas movie. It happens in Christmas time.
It does.
Of course it is. I think it is.
All right, well, David, it's over to you. Mr. Lee's just thawing out the chalk tops. He's defrosting them. They're a bit frosty, these ones. There's five of them, and you get to give us a score out of five chalk tops for here. What do you give the movie your rating?
Well, I love chalk tops, I've got to say, and I've had numerous chalk tops, probably too many chalk tops, at the Tamworth Cinema Centre. And as I watched this film and as I connected with it and engaged with its themes, I wanted more and more chalk tops. So I'm going to give this film four chalk tops.
Oh.
I'm tempted.
Very good.
Yeah, look, I'm almost tempted to give it five, but I think there were just a couple of narrative threads which didn't quite work, which didn't quite land, and that might have been the more contemporary threads involving COVID and the African-American family who moved in, that just didn't quite synthesise maybe with the rest of the film. But maybe it did, and this is certainly a film I'll be watching again.
Good on you, David. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to getting along and checking out here. Mr. Lee, next week, as we said, it is Red One, which is the movie that we'll be checking out, this Christmas movie.
It certainly will be. And if anyone listening wants to be part of the podcast and be a talking flickster, just like David has done, all you got to do is head to the forum6.com.au or odeon5.com.au websites, click on Talking Flicks, and you'll see exactly how you're just going to put your name, number, and what type of movies you like. And then once we book you in, we'll send you off to the movies on my credit card again, is it?
Oh, here JT? We go. Oh, my God, I'm over this. Well, I'll see you Friday, Mr. Lee, midday, all right? Don't be late. It's always.
Want more Talking Flicks? Get your fix with every episode anywhere, anytime. Just search Talking Flicks on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, forum6.com.au or odeon5.com.au. Until next time, we'll see you at the movies.